Welcome, members, and welcome to those of you in the audience. And with that, we'll start our session today, or our itinerary today, with a public hearing on Senate Bill 374. And welcome, Senator Walker.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mr. Chair.
It's been a while since I've addressed you, and I've never addressed you as Senator Walker before, so...
Well, thank you, and I would forgive you if you even call me Representative. It's happened from my colleagues when they come over to the Senate. They're not used to that yet. I'm Vicki Walker. I'm a state senator from District 7, and I have a really feel-good bill for you today, Senate Bill 374. And what 374 does is it gives a high school diploma upon request to a veteran of World War I, World War II, or the Korean conflict if the person attended high school before serving in the armed forces and did not complete high school because of that military service. The bill, it was really kind of interesting because I got the idea reading about it a couple years ago and introduced a bill, and Senator Hannan introduced a similar bill at the request of the students you see listed on the bill title, Ben Claflin and Aaron Gell of Talent Middle School. They didn't have all the elements. I think theirs was just World War I. Mine was World War I and II. And so we combined our two bills, and then when I spoke to the Veterans Association, they said, well, you know, Senator, we'd really appreciate it if you could put people in the Korean conflict in the bill, because that's the forgotten war, and it truly is. So many of us forget about our servicemen and women who were over in Korea. So currently in the state of Oregon, we offer an operation recognition program for those kinds of students, well, those kinds of adults who went to war, but it's not a diploma. It's not the same thing, and this will provide a diploma to anyone, a real diploma, and it will also provide a diploma to their family members if that person is deceased. We did put in an emergency clause because these people are not getting any younger, and so we'd like to have that opportunity. Though we have someone in Salem, actually, who is 103, and I believe he's from World War I, but he does have his diploma. I was hoping he didn't, so we could give him one, but he does. There are 32 states who have created programs to give veterans honorary diplomas. Of those 30 states, 4 also give diplomas to World War I veterans. Those are World War II has 32 states. 10 also give diplomas to veterans of the Korean War, and 3 give diplomas to veterans of the Vietnam War. We did discuss that issue, but we felt that the Vietnam War, these folks were still young enough to be able to get their diploma in some way. So we limited it to World War I, II, and the Korean conflict. It was passed on a unanimous vote in committee and on the floor, and I sure appreciate your support today. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Thank you. I might add, Senator, that your discussing the Vietnam War takes care of a note we had exchanged here. What about the Vietnam veterans? But you've covered that, so that you've anticipated our question perfectly.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, because the Veterans Association actually did talk to me about that, and they just felt that that was not appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I think they're the ones to make that decision.
Yes, Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize, I came in a little late. I was just curious about the Talent Middle School students, is it?
Mm-hmm.
They proposed, did they bring this to you? Or?
They brought it to Senator Hannan, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dalto. You missed my earlier discussion. I had introduced the bill separately, not knowing that Senator Hannan had introduced a similar bill. And his was introduced at the request of these two students. And so we combined the bills, and we had to use mine because his relating clause was too narrow. So we used my bill and put them in both. And so these students are going to be just tickled that they've seen a bill through the process, as well as helped out our veterans.
I would join you, and I wish we had our World War I veteran here, because that war ended on November 11, 1918. So to meet and talk with someone who engaged in that war would be quite an opportunity and quite a nice experience. But I'm glad you included the World War I, because there are some veterans, not many I predict, but certainly some.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And my father-in-law just passed away in September, and he was a World War II veteran, disabled, lost his leg in World War II, but he did get a diploma before he went off to war. And I just... I feel it honors all of those veterans who put their lives on the line for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Get back to labor and your labor committee.
All right.
Well, thank you. With that, then we'll call up Paula Brown and Greg Warnock and Dennis Hoyman.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Public Information Manager for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 374. This bill, I won't go into a lot of the, I had some information here that Senator Walker covered very well what the bill would do. And we felt that the bill certainly makes sense. It's very straightforward. It would give a diploma to the World War I, World War II, and Korean conflict veterans who left high school to serve in the military. These Americans served their country honorably. These men and women believed that their dream was worth fighting for. They were in school, and they dropped out. They traded their school books for uniforms and rifles to serve this country. At that time, there was no SIM. There was no CAM. And I understand maybe there won't be a SIM and a CAM again, but today we have advanced placement classes that place individuals in the advanced placement classes. At that time, the advanced placement classes were placing these individuals in foxholes, in gun positions on ships. They were laying flat on the tail gun turret of a B-17. And although they didn't learn in a traditional classroom, they certainly did learn the subjects that they needed to survive in life. They learned geography because they marched and crawled all over Europe, the Middle East, Asia, the Pacific, the Atlantic. They actually wrote the book on geography. They learned biology by removing a bullet from their buddy or by putting a compress on the chest wound to stop the bleeding. They learned mathematics the hard way. Their lives depended on it. They read maps. Artillery projections and weight distributions were other things that they needed to do. And as far as history, they actually made history. Not every veteran returning from war returned to high school, and there were lots of reasons. Many of them were married with small children. They went to work to provide for their families. They immediately began building the world that we enjoy today. They fought for a dream. They built America, and they gave opportunity to you and me. They saved the world. They gave the world hope for a better tomorrow. They gave us an opportunity for the education that they themselves gave up. Senator Walker also talked about the honorary diplomas, and that was something that the Department of Veterans Affairs worked with the Oregon Department of Education to do. At the time, I do recall a comment that our director made, though, about the diplomas being honorary because of the SIM and CAM requirements, and he simply said, "What a shame. You know, we should be able to give them a real diploma." Senate Bill 374 is an opportunity to do the right thing for veterans who made a sacrifice for all of us. Maybe they didn't learn math, geography, biology, and history in the classroom, but they certainly did learn them. And I hope that you will support Senate Bill 374 today. Thank you.
My name is Dennis Hyman, Chairman Backlund, other representatives. I am a Vietnam veteran, and I heard Senator Walker talk and brought up the Vietnam veteran. We are not offended at all of being excluded. In another 20 years, I might be, but right now, the Korean veterans are a forgotten war. It seems that they came back and very quietly blended back into society. When Vietnam came up, and we made such an issue about how badly we were treated, the Korean veterans lost all honor, and they were buried. And I'm glad that they are finally including these veterans. They're up in their 70s. 60s and late 60s and 70s is about time we honored them. So as a Vietnam veteran, I do support this bill.
If I could add just one thing, Chairman, I did want to recognize there are World War I veterans. You are absolutely correct. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs estimates as of September 2002 that there were 6 living World War I veterans in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Greg Warnock. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Veterans Association, and we absolutely support this bill and also appreciate Senators Hannon and Walker for presenting this and getting it through the Senate side and bringing that to you. As you know, we've worked very hard to get tangible benefits back to veterans, especially our war veterans that are so deserving of the honor, respect, and benefits that they've been promised. Senator Walker called this a feel-good bill, I think was the term she used. And I want to present that it's more than that. It really is something tangible to those veterans who receive that. And we absolutely support that, and thank you for your consideration.
Okay, well,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, excuse me, Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any of you can answer this. I'm trying to understand what the tangible value of what you've called a real diploma compared with an honorary diploma is. What do you and the people that this is aimed at see as the difference?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, the veterans typically get honorary benefits. If they're with the Rotary or if they speak before the House or the Senate, there's honor given to them. And there's so much honor in many circles that it almost becomes diminished. When they see a diploma that says honorary, that means fake. When they see diploma, that's real. That's where that benefit comes. It's something that they know that their life experience and their sacrifice is deserving a real diploma. And as Department of Veterans Affairs has said, they learned mathematics the hard way. They learned communication the hard way. They learned sacrifice the hard way. All of the things that we attribute to a good education, they learned the hard way, and we think that deserves something real and not something fake.
Representative Backlund and Nolan, in answer to that, I have to agree with Greg. An honorary award is a fake thing. In Vietnam, it was real popular because it was such an unpopular war. They would hand out medals left and right, bronze stars, silver stars. And we saw in the Vietnam area, a lot of these veterans came back here and threw those medals at the Capitol and said, we don't even want these because they meant nothing to them. And that's about the way we feel about an honorary award. True veteran, when they have a bronze star or a silver star for award for valor, we will look at it and you will see on that ribbon a V, which stands for valor. Those other awards that you see with these guys, 42 rows of ribbons up here, those are honorary. They could put themselves in for the medals and get awarded them. They mean really nothing other than they look good to the public. So that's the difference between an honorary and something that is tangible.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow up.
And I certainly want to honor the experiences and the service and the hardships that our veterans have undergone, have submitted themselves to and overcome. But I'm having trouble with the flip side of that, with the students who actually pass the tests that are required to get a diploma and studied the courses and did the homework and accrued the credits, and then to have someone get the same diploma without having demonstrated the same knowledge and skills. Help me understand why that doesn't diminish the real diploma that other people have earned by fulfilling the requirements.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, I think a couple of things. Back to the honorary diploma part just for a second and any tangibility. I think that what a regular high school diploma would do for the veterans is it validates what you did was important. Your education, while not in the classroom, and there certainly are alternative methods of education today, it lets them know you did meet the requirements. We do value you. You have earned a high school diploma. Maybe the test they took wasn't on paper, but I submit that whenever they figured out the artillery projections, when they were doing the first aid, when they were doing the map reading, they absolutely did learn those things. Now, because they didn't come back to the classroom and sit in the classroom and take a test, I even find it difficult to imagine that any World War I age person, World War II or Korean conflict, that did not serve, that are of those same ages, would resent that. I think that they probably would as well. Be very supportive of that. I find it difficult to think that they wouldn't, or that they, additionally, that there would be any financial or any kind of gain. I guess that would be the thing. I feel like they certainly are entitled to a regular diploma, and additionally, that there's no gain that they're going to receive other than the feeling that they're going to realize that their service is appreciated and that they are getting the diploma because they learned those subjects in other ways.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Vakin.
I wonder, too, if what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that because our government, and it was necessary, but took away the normal fashion in which these veterans would have earned their high school diploma, that we're going to give it back to them in a way that isn't the traditional way as well, because we just are going to give the benefit of the doubt that since you've all proven yourselves in so many ways, that you would have proven yourself the same way with that same kind of commitment and valor if you had had the chance to be in high school. And so we're going to give the benefit of the doubt. And meaning that you didn't have to prove that you would have scored 100 on the test. We're going to assume you would have because you already proved yourself. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I absolutely think that's a very fair statement.
And if I may add, Mr. Chair, Representative Vakian, very well said. That's exactly what we're looking for. Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. With that, we've had four people sign up and we've had them testify, so we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 374 and we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 374. Representative Scott?
Chair, I move Senate Bill 374 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Scott moves Senate Bill 374, A, engrossed, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Gina, call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Representative
Scott?
Aye.
Representative
Boston? Aye.
Representative
Boston?
Aye.
Representative
Thompson? Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, Senate Bill 374A engrossed is declared passed. Carrier, Representative Dalto, thank you.
I'll give you all the good ones.
Master with his hands. We'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 185. Jim, you want to bring us up to date with the staff summary?
Yes, sir. Senate Bill 185 allows the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to guarantee loans made to non-resident students or their parents who attend eligible non-Oregon post-secondary institutions. Declares emergency, takes effect July 1, 2003.
And Jeff, help me again with your last name.
Chair Backlund and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Sweetser.
Yes.
I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Student Assistance Commission.
Thank you.
And I would echo the comments that the committee administrator made regarding this bill. And I just want to start out by saying that in anticipation of appearing before you, I think the question that you would ask is, why is this bill before you? And the reason why is we are a guarantor of federal student loans that that are made around the world. And we have students that we serve in three capacities. We have in-state students attending an in-state school. We have an in-state student, an Oregonian, attending an out-of-state school. We have out-of-state students who come into Oregon to attend an Oregon school. And the fourth piece is the out-of-state students who are attending out-of-state schools is not a part of our plan, but it is a part of the federal student loan program. And the areas that we're really focusing on are the border states, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and California. We have schools in on the borders of Washington, Oregon, that have two-year schools. Those students end up going to Portland State University. We have two-year institutions in Idaho where those students end up going to Eastern Oregon University. We have College of the Redwoods in Northern California that end up going to Southern Oregon University. And this this would allow us to serve those students throughout their college experience. And one of the goals in the student loan industry and program is to be to have one guarantor, one lender for that student, so that there aren't a myriad of players as a student progresses through their college experience, and when they get out of college and begin to repay their student loans, they get to deal with one entity. And that's really the goal of this bill. And I also handed you a sheet that is entitled, Why Should the Student Assistance Commission Be in the Student Loan Guarantee Business? And the first point that I want to point out, and it's really the second one on this sheet of paper, is that there aren't any general funds associated with the operation of the Guaranteed Student Loan Program that we currently operate for students. The second point is the loan program creates a synergy that allows us to reduce our cost overall in delivering services to our customers that we would not have without the loan program. And it provides resources for staffing. For instance, my position is 80% paid through the loan program, so the state gets an executive director for one-fifth of the actual cost. The loan program also is provides over 50 jobs, again without general fund cost, that are involved in accomplishing the work of the loan program. It creates state revenue through income taxes, and it also supports local businesses and the economy. Another point that I'd like to make is that through our budget process, that the loan program provides support for the state government service charges. We have about $286,000 that we provide in the state budget process to cover a range of services. The next point is that the loan program keeps money in the state and allows us to create opportunities to serve our customers, the students, even more. We do a good amount of work in default prevention activities. We do entrance and exit counseling for schools with their students, informing them of their student loan obligations, what their rights and responsibilities are. We work with schools to keep their default rates down in the student loan industry. And then the last piece is that we also act as a resource for students and their families as far as learning more about how to go to college, how to access resources to go to college. And our participation in this program allows us to fund those types of activities.
Okay.
Yes, Representative Farr.
Thank you. Mr. Sweetser, in any way does this diminish opportunities for Oregon students to go to school?
That is a very good question. Chair Backlund and Representative Farr, no, it does not. These are, in the business that we are in, we deal in electronic processing, and it is, our focus is still on Oregon students. This allows us to serve a wider population, decrease our per unit cost, and provide more resources to target in Oregon.
So if the people I represent come to me and say, why are you diluting the pool for Oregon students, I can very truthfully say we're not.
Mm-hmm. Chair Backlund and Representative Farr, that is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we need to go back to Oregon Student Assistance Commission 101 for me. I'm trying to understand it, and probably if we put some names to things, it would at least help me. Right now, you can do student loans to Oregon residents going to school in Oregon. You can do student loans to Oregon students going to Dartmouth. And what you're asking for now is to be able to do student loans for students living in Arizona who want to go to Montana State.
This bill would allow us to do that. The focus is on the border states who we have relationships with, or we have had schools come to us and ask us if we would be their guarantor. And currently we're not in a position to do that. We don't envision going to Arizona looking for business. The focus is on serving Oregonians and the border states who may be coming into Oregon schools, and this bill would allow us to do that. So the key is we want to be able to offer a student really, in essence, one-stop shopping for their loan, so they don't have multiple guarantors, multiple lenders.
Follow up,
please. I understood about the ones that were in close proximity to Oregon, and if I'm understanding correctly, we are providing a service for out-of-state students, and if that is the case, why don't those students use their own state facilities, if you will, or systems? California must have a system set up for this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Why don't they use their own? Am I missing a piece here?
Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, this is students are looking, most students, and this is a generalization on my part, don't really care who their guarantor is, but schools do because of the services that we provide them and the benefits that we provide students. I lost the question at what I did. So could you repeat your question, please?
Why are we providing this service to out-of-state students?
Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, because it is a federal student loan program, and we envision some economies of scale in being able to open the program, our program up to match what the federal government already says is an authorized activity, an acceptable activity. It allows us to increase our revenues without really an increase in cost, but allows us to have more resources to use in Oregon to serve Oregon students and Oregonians. That's the purpose of this bill.
Follow up.
I follow up on that because that confuses me a little more. If these loans are being requested by Californians to use in California schools, how does that increase any benefit to Oregon?
Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, in the student loan business, the federal program has revenue streams associated with being a guarantor. And when we guarantee a loan, we get a piece of revenue in order to do the business, and increase volumes without a significant increase in our overall operating costs just gives us more resources to apply to use in Oregon to serve Oregon students and their families. That's
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So kind of like a commission almost. Representative Ockin, you...
No, I think okay. that I was still operating at the prerequisite to Commission 101 level, but Representative Hobson just cleared that up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Nolan.
Since we've now finished Student Assistance 101, let's go to Banking 101.
Okay.
What's your default rate?
Our default rate is about 5%.
So if this student that Representative Hobson was talking about from Arizona who wants to go to Kentucky State wants us to guarantee their loan and then they default on it, mm-hmm. help me understand your answer to Representative Farr that there isn't an adverse impact on Oregon students. We're on the hook for that money then, aren't we?
Chair Backlund and Representative Nolan, in the we are a guarantor of federal student loans to lenders. We have a reinsurance agreement with the U.S. Department of Education that while it isn't 100%, it's between 95 and 98% reinsurance on that. So it isn't like if they default, then all of that money goes out. We apply for reinsurance through the U.S. Department of Education to get reimbursed.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Follow up.
So are there other states trying to poach on the business in Oregon?
Chair Backlund and Representative Nolan, the answer is yes. And so what we're asking for is really the ability to operate in all arenas, and right now we're constrained by the boundaries of the state of Oregon. And we have national guarantors in Indianapolis who are looking at taking our customers away. They're a national organization. They operate nationally.
Another follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Sweetser, how will we know, what's your metric for measuring whether this experiment actually does help either your solvency or your ability to serve Oregon students?
Chair Backlund and Representative Nolan, it's in our budget from a revenue and expenditure standpoint that with increased revenues and modest increase of expenditures, we get to redirect any of those additional monies to benefit our operation, our services that we provide. We currently have the Aspire program. The loan program helps support our private scholarship funds. Our accountants, our HR people are supported by the loan program, and without that kind of synergy, we are a very small organization doing very little to provide help for Oregonians. I don't have an absolute black and white answer for you, but it really, if on a macro scale, increased revenue, expenses aren't going to be increasing as fast as the revenue, and it gives us options and opportunities to provide additional services to Oregonian. We have a website, several websites that we maintain. We do OPB's scholarship day in December, scholarship broadcast.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Follow-up.
So how much does your 0305 budget assume is the net revenue benefit of this bill?
We have estimated that it's about $160,000 in other funds revenue.
Net or?
Net.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Jeff, did you give us some idea of the numbers of students that are now you're now guaranteeing, or you are the guarantor, I should say? And also, assuming this bill passes, do you have an estimate as to how many additional students might be involved?
Chair Backlund and members of the committee, I don't have that information right at my fingertips. We are looking at doing somewhere in the neighborhood of 175 to 200 million in student loans this next year. And this would it would be higher than that, but I don't have the specifics.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Excuse me. With that, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 185. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 185.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
I move Senate Bill 185 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative Farr. Representative Farr moves Senate Bill 185 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Representative Nolan.
I don't have language, and I apologize for coming without that preparation, but I actually learned something in the public hearing and so wasn't prepared. It seems like a reasonable experiment, as I characterized it earlier, but I think of it as an experiment, and I would be much more comfortable if we treated it as a pilot program and put, for example, a sunset on it and asked for a demonstration 2 years from now that, in fact, it is helping the commission's principal charge of assisting Oregon students, and at a minimum not diminishing from its ability to do that. And if I would be much more enthusiastic in my support of it if we were able to do that.
Members, Jim has pointed out to me that we have a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. We could, Representative Nolan, we could pass it there, I presume, and your suggestion could be considered there.
That sounds
would that
reasonable.
Would that be reasonable?
Yep.
Representative, I withdraw my earlier motion.
Thank you.
And we'll substitute, I move Senate Bill 185 to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Farr moves Senate Bill 185 to the... with a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Just to set the record straight, I will be voting no on that motion because it recommends passage, but I hope to be able to vote yes on the bill when it comes to the floor, amended as I have suggested.
Okay, well said. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm prepared to vote for this. Because of the sponsors, the fact that you feel that it's necessary, it was a little confusing to me, and maybe 101 was a too high a level to enter. I do share Representative Nolan's concerns, though. I picked up particularly on the word poaching. Are other states poaching here? And I guess if it is a common practice, there may be some reason and validity to it. The other question I have is for the committee administrator. I seem to be missing the referral to Ways and Means.
We have it on our cover sheet. There was a motion to rescind in the Senate.
Can we follow up?
Follow up. Yeah.
I'm really confused now then. If there is a cost on this and it's going to Ways and Means when we have no revenue impact, am I missing something again?
I believe what their impact is more revenue than fiscal. But it's set up to go into Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Dalton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, but that confuses me as I look at the measure stuff summary that says no revenue impact, and it says fiscal statement issued, but I do not have the fiscal statement.
I understand. I see it too. The fiscal statement is issued. It states on our summary, and yet we don't have those in our possession.
Right? No, sir, I don't. Yeah. Have it for you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Was there a reason why this was why the subsequent referral was rescinded on the Senate side?
I don't have that information, sir.
Yeah.
I can. If you can recess this, I can get some information for you and. We have a video conference on Senate Bill 870. If you want to start on that, then I can get back with your information. We take final action.
Possibly that, or we could just maybe bring this back another meeting, and by then we'll have the information that we're seeking.
And Mr. Chair, by then, I might be able to bring an amendment that would address my concerns and perhaps some of the concerns that are identified here. And we could also rescind a referral if you wanted to reschedule it for next week.
So in terms of technical procedure here, if we want to do that, do we withdraw Representative Farr's motion?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, shooting for a record, I've brought
Representative Farr, in the world of athletics, records are made to be broken, so that's okay. Okay, so Representative Farr withdraws his motion, and we will that will give us some opportunities then to reconsider and to do what we need to do to bring this bill back. So with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 185. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 870. So I think we're going to have some teleconferencing here, too, members.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Jim, you want to bring us up to date on a summary?
Yes, sir. Senate Bill 870 requires Blue Mountain Community College, Treasure Valley Community College, and Eastern Oregon University to collaborate to develop a plan to instruct students on a semester basis. Development of the plan must begin no later than January 1st, 2004. Directs community colleges and the university to implement the plan prior to the beginning of the 2005-06 school year. Requires those schools to report to the 73rd Legislative Assembly on the plan development and shall report to the 74th Legislative Assembly on plan implementation. Directs Commissioner of Community College Services and State Board of Education to ensure appropriated monies are delivered to college in reasonable manner regardless of whether college instructs students on a semester or quarterly basis. Declares an emergency effective July 1, 2003.
Okay, thank you. I think we have the good doctor from Eastern Oregon here to testify.
Thank you, Chairman Backlund. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. Vice Chair Farr, Vice Chair Hobson, members of the committee, can you hear me okay?
No, yes, yeah.
A little bit well.
And thank you for the privilege of being able to testify by veto this afternoon. It certainly saves us a great deal of time and energy, but I appreciate the opportunity to do so. We're here today to speak in favor of Senate Bill 870, which, anticipating Representative Nolan's point, this is a pilot program to investigate the transition to the metric system for these three institutions on the eastern side of Oregon. Recognizing fully that the authority for setting the calendar belongs to the State Board of Higher Education for Eastern Oregon University, we intend to collaborate very closely with the State Board. However, what we're proposing is a pilot program to investigate the feasibility of adopting the semester system for these three institutions to collaborate very closely on the east side of Oregon. To put this in proper perspective, Mr. Chairman, 77% of the institutions across America have gone to a semester system. Roughly 7% of the institutions left are on the quarter system across America. This has important consequences for our students. One is that there are absolutely no textbooks being written for the quarter system any longer. What that means is that while our students purchase semester textbooks, use approximately two-thirds, and then buy another textbook for the next quarter, our student government estimated they would save close to $400 per year on textbooks alone by this pilot study. What we intend to do is to initiate a study over the next two to three years and recommend back to the State Board on the pilot program. Are there any questions, Mr. Chair?
Well, thank you, Doctor. I think your testimony has brought us up to date, and we appreciate that.
Okay.
There is a -1 amendment. Are you saying you're okay with that?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. All the members, we do have the -1s available.
Maybe he's going to hear it.
The -1, it's going to be a Grattan will talk about it, yeah.
But
Okay, Grattan, you want to...
Mr. Chairman, I'm also accompanied by President Sorensen from Treasure Valley Community College as well today.
Okay, fine. Go ahead, Dr. Sorensen.
Oh, thank you. Chairman Backlund, Vice Chair Farr and Hopson, it's a pleasure again to address you today on Senate Bill 870. We in Eastern Oregon, I believe, are in a somewhat unique position in several accounts to take on this project. First of all, it's a benefit to us as institutions, where I serve students in Ontario, Oregon, and if you look at the regional area, many of our students go to Idaho to school or to Eastern Oregon. So we're in a somewhat unique position as an institution in this state. So it definitely is a benefit to us. We believe there are some obvious unique benefits. We've laid off 25% of our full-time workforce for the last year, and I would rather the faculty, staff, and students spend time on assisting students on retention issues and good advising than do drops and adds and ongoing registration appointments. We also have increased during the same period of time about 10% of our enrollment base at the institution. There are some significant benefits to the institution. I'm going to read a couple of them out of national studies that have taken place. There's about 15 short points here. Alabama college system found when they did it, and this is in the last 5 years or so, more time to digest and retain course material in the classroom, more opportunities for instructors to assess student progress, more opportunities to identify and correct difficulties, more flexibility in scheduling classes. Textbooks, as we've mentioned, are written only for semesters now. There's fewer registration cycles and supplies and advertising periods, which obviously save funds and supplies and money. Reduced student files, fewer published class schedules, reduced costs of textbooks, reduced financial aid processes, and increased student retention. The University of California, Davis also provides additional information. Provide more opportunity for thorough examination of subjects. Permits more meaningful term paper and research assignments. It allows time at the beginning to get into a subject and the end to review course material prior to finals week. Permits students to choose research topics and spend time on them in a reflective fashion. It allows students more time to pace their studies. Promotes greater interaction between faculty and students. Results in proportionally less time to administering exams, obviously by one term. Reduces faculty time spent on course preliminaries such as reading lists, syllabi, etc. Promotes better use of textbooks, again, which are designed only for semesters, and reduces the tendency towards fragmentation of courses, which is probably the most important point. We believe that this is a beneficial pilot process for this state. We believe that we can lead the way. We believe that we can do this with little or no cost. We're certainly not asking for any funds. And we believe that we can do this in a very positive manner and set the stage for others if they wish to follow. Again, I would hope that you would support this Senate bill.
Thank you very much, Dr.
If I can answer any further questions, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
Do I understand you to say that you have read the Dash 1 amendments and they're perfectly all right by you?
From what I've been told, and I'm not sure I saw the current one, but our discussion over here is we can live with that. I prefer the original language, but I would live with the Dash 1 amendment.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Farr.
I had heard from one of the sponsors of the bill that there were some concerns with the Dash 1s. At this point in time, I'm trying to reach him, which is Representative Smith,
mm-hmm.
and, to see. I'm perfectly fine going ahead with the Dash 1 amendments, but if possible, I would like a clarification from Greg as to what his concerns were. Probably they were just the same as the President, that he would prefer it without,
mm-hmm.
but
with but would accept it with, if necessary. Mm-hmm. Grattan, you want to come up, please?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
And excuse me, we also have Cam Brawley, excuse me.
Okay, Sam. For the record, let me give you my testimony. I'm Becca Karras, Director of Government Relations for the Oregon University System, here to address you on the measure and support of the Dash 1 amendments, which will make Senate Bill 870 acceptable to the three institutions named in the bill, as you've just heard, and also acceptable to the State Board of Higher Education, in whom you have vested the authority for creation and management of a common academic calendar for the campuses of the OUS. Let me let you read the rest of my testimony. It's there before you. I believe that if we were to look at the Dash 1 amendments, you would see that what it does is provide for a feasibility study, action be taken in creation of the feasibility study and a plan no later than February 29, 2004, 10 months from now, and that not later than June 30, 2004, the State Board of Higher Education decide for Eastern Oregon University to provide instruction on a semester basis, and if they do, approve the provision of instruction on a semester basis. This would provide for the State Board of Higher Education, which has for the university system the authority to create that common calendar, the ability to work cooperatively with all of the parties, and for our portion of it, have a timely and appropriate study taken and a decision made. We can't speak for the community colleges, but with me is the commissioner who can.
For the record, Cam Coyce-Brawley, commissioner of community colleges and the Department of Workforce Development. The State Board of Education is interested in the contents of Senate Bill 870, although we do not have academic calendar authority as the State Board of Higher Education does. So our interest is a little bit different. It is not direct authority. We are interested and supportive of the Dash 1 amendments because they will provide us the vehicle to ensure that all the campuses, be they university or community colleges, are in touch with and up to date with what we learn from this feasibility, because there has been conversation in the past about moving to a semester system. It has yet to come to fruition, but our interest is in making sure that it's a statewide conversation, even if the pilot is in Eastern Oregon.
And Mr. Chairman, let me also say that I visited with Representative Greg Smith today, and he said that if it was the Dash 1s were acceptable to the presidents, then it was acceptable to him.
Thank you.
I would like to, of course, not report for him. He may himself. But I would like to, if I may, suggest a work session at your next meeting, because I'd like to perfect the Dash 1 amendments to allow all the parties to get to a greater sense of cooperation and collegiality by saying on line 5 of the Dash 1, would read, the Joint Board of Education shall seek a working group, I would insert a comma, and say, in collaboration with representatives of Blue Mountain Community College, Treasure Valley Community College, and Eastern Oregon University, comma, to conduct a study, so that it is demonstrable in the amendment and within the bill that it is to be not a top-down study, but a tabletop study with all parties co-equal in the measure, co-equal in the study, and that they will have access to and be participants with the decision-making authorities in that study, so that they will feel more comfortable, and we would also. And I know you don't like conceptual amendments, but I think that would be helpful if we could do that at a work session later.
Okay. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions, and let me do the latter one first. What you're saying is that you would want to make this a task force or a work group, whatever, that would encompass the whole university system, even though the pilot might just reflect these three?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hobson, it would be the joint boards, and they would work in collaboration with representatives of the three institutions in conducting a study of the feasibility, providing instruction on semesters at those three institutions. so that the study would include the three institutions along with the joint boards, not just the joint boards doing a study on them or about them. The joint boards are doing a study with them about them.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did Eastern Oregon or one of or both of the community colleges already approach the State Board of Higher Education with this request? And if so, what was that process?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hobson, I'm not aware of any recent formal request for that would go through, say, the Academic Affairs Committee or to the Chancellor and the Board to commence such a study. We've had studies in the past. The last one, I think, was over a decade ago. But the authority to do this is vested for the State Board in Chapter 351 and can, on their own motion, conduct such a study if they were requested to.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I'm curious, Grant, please help me. Why wouldn't Eastern Oregon go to the State Board of Higher Education and request permission if, in fact, the State Board of Higher Education does have that authority?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I'm competent to answer that question, but I think you have a representative of the campus here or within reach of your question.
Chairman Backman, Vice Chair Hobson.
Yes.
The purpose of legislation this time was basically to reassure many of the faculty who had strong reservations of working up a semester plan based upon withdrawal of legislative support at the last moment when this plan was first visited over a decade ago. So in consultation with Senator Nelson and Representative Smith, it was decided it would be best to have legislative approval first, or legislative direction first, before this would proceed.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. This time it really is a follow-up. I'm sorry that I don't quite understand that. And please interrupt and correct me wherever I'm wrong here. The State Board of Higher Education has the authority to set the schedules. If one wants a change, would it not be appropriate to go through the State Board of Education, of Higher Education? I'll get to you next.
Chairman Backman, Vice Chair Hobson. We were not anticipating changing the calendar. This is a pilot study to test the feasibility of such a transfer. It's not an instituting a semester system.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Bakken.
Well, that would beg the question, I suppose, then, is does the State Board of Higher Ed have the authority to authorize the pilot program? And if they do, why then is a new law necessary? The question is to anybody within
my... rushing fully into the flame here, Chairman Backlund, Representative Backlund. What I would suggest on doing in this is because many of the institutions across the system have expressed interest in the President's Council and various other formats, it was the thought that if the three institutions who have close collaboration in the eastern side of the state would pilot the program, determine the feasibility of application, it would be much simpler than trying to have the entire system make the conversion have the entire system do the pilot program, so to speak. So we are a test program, and our intent was to report back to the State Board on the feasibility of making this conversion. The purpose of having the legislative mandate associated with it is to have sort of a guarantee, if you will, sir, that it will not be pulled away after the work has been done on this plan, if it's acceptable to the State Board.
Mr. Chairman, if I might elaborate on that, as amended by the Dash Ones, it would do, as President Creighton says, create a pilot feasibility study and make a recommendation about whether that plan would be implemented in that region. So the Dash One does accomplish that. It's been well over a decade ago. In fact, I think probably, I'm not sure in my memory, 15 years ago or more, a study was done of semesters. The state board brought it forward. They had done all the study. And then, as President Creighton says, there was a legislative eruption regarding that, and the state board backed away from it. So clearly there's some concern about whether you were to follow that path again and then go into a what could be a buzzsaw of legislative objections to try and find a legislative solution. The bill as printed would in fact create the study and then implement it, which the state board would have serious objections to, but does support the Dash Ones, which does, as President Creighton says, call for a feasibility study of a pilot for that area and provide the decision-making authorities to make that decision regarding the implementation of it. And I think we'd all be in agreement on it. Ken might want to also address that question.
Representative Farr.
Mr. Chair, I would draw my motion. Oh, no.
Oh. Adding to the record, yeah, no.
Actually, I had originally requested to let you know that Representative Smith was on his way over, and in the meantime, he arrived.
So. Oh, okay. He sure did. We'd like to hear from Representative Greg Smith, if we may. Please come up.
I apologize. I'm a little late. I must tell you, it's raining now, so this is my umbrella.
Representative Smith, you're not in Eastern Oregon now. You're in Western Oregon.
That's why I don't have an umbrella. I truly appreciate the honor being here. For the record, I'm State Representative Greg Smith. I have the distinct privilege of representing Union, Wallowa, Umatilla, in Morrow County, which I also have the privilege of having Eastern Oregon University and Blue Mountain Community College in my district. I want you to know this is a bill that has been a long time coming. This is a bill that has been worked on over and over in the Senate, and this is a bill that in its current form I would ask that we pass forward and send to the House floor. The fact of the matter is we've had ample time to address these issues. This is an issue that's very important to me. This is an issue that's very important to the students at Eastern Oregon University and Treasure Valley Community College and Blue Mountain Community College. This is going to allow the community colleges and the university to put additional dollars into their programs to benefit the students. And so I know that there's a set of amendments before you, and I know you have a difficult decision ahead of you, but I would ask that we pass Senate Bill 870 in its current form and send it to the House floor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As one who's been around this semester and trimester business for about 35 years, I'm really curious the additional dollars that are going to be saved by a switch one way or the other. Could you clarify in what form those savings will come?
Sure. Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, I appreciate that question. I think that there's multiple opportunities for the community college and for the colleges and the university to save money. Everything from simple little things like eliminated printing costs to allowing students to attend classes on a lengthier basis and to provide additional time in the classroom. As I understand it, there's going to be additional work being done to determine the feasibility and to put together a strategic plan to move forward on this idea. And I think a lot of those financial savings will be flushed out. What I will share with you is this was the concept of the educational leaders from Eastern Oregon. They wanted to try this on an experimental basis. And when I heard the idea, I thought it had tremendous merit. I think part of our job down here is to look at the way government is providing services and to ask, are there better or different ways to provide services? This is an experiment. This is an opportunity for us to look at, is there another way to provide government? And I think for the benefit of the students of Eastern Oregon, we should allow them to conduct this experiment.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, Representative, as to why we don't have the Oregon University system and the community college system suggesting this pilot moving forward with it.
Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, I think that's a very fine question. The first time I understood there was opposition to this bill was 2.5 hours ago. And so I think it's very unfair to myself, to Senator Nelson, and to the citizens of Eastern Oregon that this issue is being brought up at the 11th hour.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair. As one who read it a week or 2 weeks ago, the question certainly came to mind, and I guess I'm not trying to shoot down or bring up opposition, but has there been any attempt to work with the university system and the community college system to, in fact, get this in place?
Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, I believe the answer is yes.
And
follow up?
What was the result of that interest in having the pilot program come through the two governing organizations?
Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Hobson, I am not aware of the outcome. What I will share with you is, again, my position on this issue, and that this is an opportunity for us to look at the way government is provided and the notion that there is a potential for a 15% savings that can be redirected to the students at these schools is very appealing to me. I understand the sensitivity that's involved with our colleges and our universities and OSU and the other governing bodies, but my job is to represent the citizens who sent me here, and they've asked me to move forward on this bill.
Follow up?
One last stop right now. If there is a fiscal to this, perhaps we do need a fiscal statement.
I just called legislative fiscal, and there was one issued on April 11th, and as soon as we take a recess, I'm going to run down and get it.
You're thinking right ahead of me, aren't you?
Well, thank you. Members, we have had a request for a recess. I think probably we have a Yes, Representative. Excuse me, Grattan.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think Cam had also wanted to respond to those earlier questions. Let me also respond to Representative Smith that, yes, I did see him today regarding this bill, but on the day it was heard in the Senate, there was a medical emergency in my family, and I had to leave the building and could not testify. As soon as I returned to the Capitol, I did call the chief sponsor and talked to him personally and apologized to him over the phone for my failure to appear and that I would seek amendments. Immediately, having done that, shared the amendments in concept by email with President Creighton and his staff and the Chancellor and Cam and others, and it was fairly widely distributed among those who are following the bill. My apologies again to the representative for not having gotten to him in that loop, but I did work directly with the chief sponsor and apologize to him for not having appeared on the day the bill was heard. But had I been there, we would have done exactly as we've done today and would have advanced those amendments.
Chair Backlund, I'm aware of what has transpired since the bill was heard the first time, and as I stated when I first sat down, because the State Board of Education does not have authority over the calendar, I was unsure how to approach until we had an opportunity to sit down and talk about how to include the governing bodies together through the joint boards. And make sure that the rest of the colleges were aware of and could certainly, if the 15% savings is possible, as the representative has indicated, I can't imagine that we wouldn't be all very interested in such a pilot. But right now, the feedback I have gotten from the community college presidents is that they are scrapping for every nickel that they have to keep the system, the quarter system that they have, operating. And they certainly don't want to stand in the way of those two from Oregon colleges from pursuing semesters, but I think they are a bit concerned about it being cost neutral at this time.
Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions just for clarification. If I understood you correctly, all of the community colleges are now on the quarter system.
Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, that's correct.
I should have had a little inflection so you knew that was the question. And secondly, did I hear you say the Department of Education does or does not make the decision as to whether or not the community colleges are on the quarter or semester system?
Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, if I said the Department of Education, I was very wrong because I meant to say the State Board of Education, because the Department of Education has no purview over this issue, but neither does the State Board of Education. The academic calendar is set by the local board. I would say that there is administrators and deans of all the colleges and all the universities that do meet together regularly, and certainly semesters, the academic calendar, and quarters is a considerable conversation. The State Board of Education was reviewing just this last fall a movement to 3 11-week quarters so that we could better match with the university system, because we actually had a 12-week, 11-week schedule. So we were encouraging the colleges to move to the 11-11-11 for better articulation with the university system. And at last count, at least half of them had done that, particularly those that had close ties with university. So even though we don't control it, we're certainly interested in how it progresses.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I understand you correctly, the two community colleges involved here do have the authority within their own purview to make the change to a semester system.
Chair Backlund, Representative Hobson, they do. I think if going it alone would probably be rather difficult for articulation reasons and others, but there is really nothing that stands in their way.
Representative Farr.
Thank you. A couple of questions for Representative Smith. Clearly, this is a good bill. You know, clearly, it's the intent is one to bring things together and to articulate and to save money. Could you iterate to me? Could you say to me what are your chief concerns with the amendments?
Sure. Actually, I must share with you, Chair Backlund, Vice Chair Farr, this is the first time I've seen the amendments as they're presented to me right now. What I would want this committee to know is that there is a safeguard in place with this concept, in the fact that the community colleges and the university are asked to put together a plan and to bring it back next session and then to implement the plan thereafter. And I have to believe, knowing how well my community colleges and university operate, that if through the putting together of their plan, they thought this isn't the right idea, this isn't the right course we should be going down, they would come back next session and say, Chair Backlund, we need to readdress this issue. But the fact of the matter is, the folks I have spoken to in the higher education arena back home and at the community college level, they truly believe this is the right path for them.
Thank you.
Okay. We've had a member request that we have a brief recess, and so we think we'll do that. We'll recess the... And are we in work session, Jim?
Yeah,
we will we'll close a public hearing on Senate Bill 870, and we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 870.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Representative Farr.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 185 to the floor with a debate recommendation.
185.
I'm sorry. I'm switched again. Mr. Chair, I withdraw that motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 870 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you, Representative. And where are we here? I'll repeat that here. Representative Farr moves Senate Bill 870 with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. A discussion. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In case anyone was confused, I will be voting very much against this. I believe that with the information that we have, the two community colleges involved can already make that decision on their own. And it appears to me, and I haven't heard any evidence to the contrary, what we're dealing with here is that one of our universities in our university system wants to do something. They have been told they can't do it. Therefore, they're coming to us to try and set this up. And I'm just feeling that it is not our place to make these kinds of decisions. It's the Oregon University's decision. And as one of my colleagues said to me, you know, we keep telling everybody what to do. We could have year-round legislature, and we could tell all these agencies exactly what to do. I'm not opposed to the quarter system or the semester system. I think it should be decided by the people that are involved with it, so I'm not opposed to that at all. I am opposed to us making these decisions for the university system and the community college system, so I will be a no.
Representative Ockin?
I first want to say that I do appreciate the sentiments behind the bill and that Representative Smith has presented to us today. But in addition, I agree with everything Representative Hobson said, with one exception, and that is I didn't hear anybody say they've been told they can't do it. And so it doubles my opposition that we are put in a position of dictating to somebody what they must do when we have already granted the authority by law for them to do it on their own, or I suppose to go get the blessing of the State Board of Higher Ed and do it on their own that way as well, that neither of those methods are being implemented, and instead we are going to create a law to do what could already be done otherwise. And for that reason, I must oppose it.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Chair Backlund. Representative Smith, you've heard the comments from a couple of representatives. You were here late, but I think the president said that they could accept. They would rather have the bill as it's written, but they could accept the dash ones. What's the reason that you are having difficulty with the dash ones?
Well, I appreciate that question, Chair Backlund, Representative Scott. The universities made it very clear to me that they value the relationship they have with the Oregon University system, and they want to ensure that that relationship continues to remain fully intact and continues to flourish as it currently exists. And I fully respect Eastern Oregon University and the president's decision to continue to work in that manner. But at the same time, I'm represented by the citizens of District 57, and the constituents in my district have asked me to look for every opportunity to create good government, to turn over every stone, to find potential savings. My students, who I represent at Blue Mountain Community College and at Eastern Oregon University, and even folks who travel over to Treasure Valley Community College, have asked me to look for ways to ensure that every dollar that can be put into additional instruction is placed into additional instruction. And when I first heard about Senate Bill 870, it really hit me as an opportunity to put those additional dollars into classroom instruction. The Senate agreed. They passed it over here based upon the bill as it was presented. And so while I truly do appreciate the opportunity that OUS has provided to the university to have these amendments, the fact of the matter is I do think it's okay for a member of this body to look for ways to improve government, and I think that's what this bill does. What I will tell you is if this bill should pass out of committee, my very first step is going to be to turn around and to go work with those folks to figure out how to make this work for everyone. But the fact of the matter is we're in a short timeline here. These were handed to me as I walked through the door. I heard we had an issue about the eighth bill into House session today, and I'm not sure that's appropriate. So I would ask that we move this forward, and I will then go and work with these folks to see if there's a way to make this better.
Okay, I might, not that it's important to anybody, but I might say a word or two. I feel really badly that we've not been able to come to some true agreement. There's a certain amount of unease, I think I could say, about this whole situation. But I sometimes think we need to be a little bit bold sometimes, a little bit semi-aggressive. This is a pilot program. It's not something that's set in stone. The concept, the idea, certainly has merit. And almost with an apology to those who would prefer an amendment, I'm going to vote yes on the motion. Chair? Oh, excuse me. Representative Dolfo?
Could we restate the motion?
That's a tough one. Yes, Representative Farr moved that we move Senate Bill 870 with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Gina?
Representative Thompson?
No.
Representative Owen?
No.
Representative Scott?
Aye.
Representative Buffett?
No.
Representative
Dalton? Aye.
Representative
Barney? Aye. Chair Beck? Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, we declare Senate Bill 870 passed. That will conclude. Well, we'll first of all, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 870, and we'll adjourn the meeting.
We need a carrier.
Carrier, excuse me. Reopen Senate Bill 870. We need a carrier. Representative Smith is here. Thank you, Representative. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 870. And we've adjourned. Wow.